chair.
That art will not.
Oh. And art, yes.
Yeah, just.
Let's see. Call me into order. Roll call. We've got.
Do we know
it? Okay. You? Did everybody have a chance, hi Nate, to take a look at the minutes? Any additions or corrections?
Hi Nate.
You can go first. I thought I was listening in today, so that's
better. Oh, yes, yes,
okay, yeah.
I'll share some perspectives on wayfinding that have to do more with my personal experience than it does with the Newburgh Downtown Coalition, although my board, the Newburgh Downtown Coalition, board has been quite concerned about the inadequacy of wayfinding in downtown Newburgh. We've not taken that on as a project and bring some recommendations forward. It's just we've had a lot of discussion about how parking is difficult to find and wayfinding is, there's nothing cohesive about it. So I want to share with you my personal experience when I was managing a major project that developed a 500-acre development project in Wilsonville. We recognized that wayfinding could be incredibly important to a project of that scale. So we actually retained a wayfinding consultant, somebody who specializes in that. And it's through that experience that I learned the difference between wayfinding and signage. Wayfinding is a science. It's a science that you can analyze and understand, and the studies that they've done in that science are studying human behavior and how people react to different kinds of signs, the height of signs, the colors of signs, the shapes of signs. It is a sophisticated understanding. So my personal perspective is that we would be well served to get a cohesive wayfinding strategy before the cultural district gets finished. And downtown we do something different with private signs and somebody does something different in parking. We got cohesive, modern meeting, absolutely thinking about what we're trying to do with our wayfinding, and more than just adopting the official ODOT signs or some other signs. And we would be very well served as we try and move into a community that wants to welcome people downtown, both our residents and our visitors. So I personally have a very strong feeling about the benefit of truly sophisticated, smart thinking about wayfinding. There's a guy in Portland named Ken Ambrosini who has developed wayfinding for the city of Chicago, the city of Paris. He's internationally recognized as a wayfinding expert. Mm-hmm. Believe me, he knocked your socks off when he tells
you. What's his last name?
Ambrosini. A-M-B-R-O-S-I-N-I. Ken Ambrosini. He's really good.
Just one other thought just came to mind when you're talking about ODOT, of course, has got their blue sign. So essentially, we already have another wayfinding system, too.
Exactly.
So just to add to the confusion, you can wind up with like four different look. Well, I think the exact opposite of what you want in wayfinding.
It's interesting because at I was at a Travel Oregon Tourism Consortium meeting about 3 weeks ago, and we were just talking on a statewide basis of wishing that there was consistency in our winery signs. And, you know, look at now, we have all the ABAs doing different things, and it's, but they're looking at that as a larger project down the road. So, but, and from my standpoint, I didn't know as much as Mike knows about all these experts that specialize in the wayfinding, but just from my perspective, having some consistency. And of course, we get those visitors that, you know, come in and they complain to us about not being able to find this or that. So certainly having somebody, an expert, be able to lead that process that can help us adopt the best possible practice to benefit our businesses and our visitors would be certainly I would support. So.
Well, and I think just to inform you, one of the reasons we were thinking of a wayfinding system was how to get the A-frames and things up off the sidewalks in downtown. And if we were somehow perhaps to create, you know, a sign where businesses could pay to put their name up on the sign, and it's this way or it's that way, and then the wayfinding is taken care of all in one spot, or, you know, specific spots, and then the sidewalks are clear for walking, or
it's more attractive.
Exactly. Yeah, so mm-hmm. That was, you know, just one thought that was generated out of this group.
And I can hear the ghost of Dennis Lewis, because he raises that in our board meetings, and that is, if you're going to take the A-frames away from the businesses, you should have an obligation to provide something for them that serves the purpose just as well. He frequently raises that in our board meetings.
I don't know why I didn't think there would be people like what you described, but you know, from my perspective, recognizing that we need these wayfinding signs, I would look for variety and kind of unique qualities as well. But, you know, I would like our signage to accomplish two purposes. One is to actually do what we want it to do for helping people who are in and around this area to know where to go. But the other is to have it done in such a creative way that there's as much chatter about, have you seen the signs that they do in Newburgh? You know, that it accomplishes the purpose, but it still does it in a creative way that isn't done like maybe anybody else. And I think when you get experts who can kind of see what the tenor of our town is and the direction we want to go, there's no reason not to get that creative bent to it.
Well,
as well.
And I might share with you that we being the park district, putting the other hat on, for the Chatham Heritage Trail system, not having a lot of money to go out and buy land and build new trails, we did recognize an opportunity to start the trail system on our urban settings where we just use existing sidewalks. But we hired a wayfinding company in Portland, an architectural firm that does wayfinding, to design, and those signs actually have a hierarchy. So certain kinds of signs will have one kind of sign and a different kind. And so as we get more of the trail developed, you'll be able to read the language of those wayfinding signs. So there's all that kind of strategy goes into wayfinding, not just making sure you have the right sign at the right, or have a sign at the right corner.
Yeah. have interested parties beyond the committee who received this document that we have attached to with refining signs and some general observations that would be helpful.
Well, we have actually a resume.
I would suggest that's a good start for the Chamber and the Downtown Association, at least to have that in hand as a kind of a starting point. So that's what we're looking at here, too.
I think what he's referring to is, again, this is all just draft stuff. We're just trying to refine this point. But, well, we don't have anything. Well, yes, one of the recommendations is to do a downtown wayfinding system. But, again, the recommendation is not for this committee to do it, but to have, again, some group of all everybody get together. And there's some pictures in there, some examples.
They're just examples.
Well, I guarantee you that while my board hasn't launched anything to bring forward recommendations on wayfinding, the Downtown Coalition Board, if somebody does launch it, would be very enthusiastic about helping.
Same here. So,
any of the other ones again? CPRD, the cultural district.
Yes. And the cultural district, by the way, is developing its own wayfinding language as we speak.
Well, that's again, and I've talked to Rob about this and told him that he's, you know, it's a good idea that, you know, we'll need to all be working together on this.
Right.
Are there any other questions for our, yes, you, Mike and Cheryl, you're both welcome to stay for the whole meeting, but you certainly don't have to work on some more nitty-gritty recommendations here.
There was one point that I wanted to bring up with them while we had them, because certainly from the Chamber of Commerce perspective, because we recognize in our discussion that whatever guidelines we come up with, that there's going to be an education. We've had a lot of discussion about how education, not only for the current merchants, but for future ones, how important that will be for recognizing what the requirements are and enforcing them, hoping then to make his job a little easier. But in our discussion, we indicated that Chamber of Commerce is a key player in that, and we've not really discussed that with you. I mean, we're assuming that you'd be a willing partner, but wouldn't necessarily want to spring something on you either.
Well, that's moving away from wayfinding, right? We're talking about the general science.
Yeah, you're talking,
right?
Yeah.
And what we're talking
about
here is, if you look at the packet on the recommendation number 4, page 8, talks about education, support, enforcement, maintenance, and again, that's more like the Chamber to help us with that kind of stuff. Mostly the education part of that, helping the business understand this compliance there, put the reason behind it, trying to get the best compliance possible.
And just to add to that a little, David got like a one-page example of something the city did. It's just like that information handout. So, Charlie, I don't think the idea would be that you'd be explaining the sign to people. It would probably be more like we would develop a handout and you had it there.
Yeah.
So that members could access it,
whatever. Yeah. Well, and, you know, obviously depending on what the code is, the message coming from a peer or a source other than the city might.
Well, that's what we're kind of hoping. Maybe like we could have maybe something. Yeah, like workshops.
No, I will agree with the sign code, right?
Yeah. Just sign here. We could have a readers or whatever, a workshop, those kinds of things, working and explaining all this. Mm-hmm. So lots of the avenues you guys provide to help get this information out.
Okay, sure.
Mike, maybe a question for you. You said you worked with Wilsonville on there. What kind, for a private business, what kind of fees were attached to their wayfind signage when they finally did adapt it, you know?
There are none. No fees to the private business. But you have to remember that was raw land development, and it's primarily a residential. It has a retail core, but the wayfinding program that was adopted by the developer and not the city, but the, by the developer as part of the CC&Rs, had the requirements for the commercial that was going to be developed. It had awning lettering requirements. It had, you know, all sorts of requirements. There were no costs.
No cost to the. Okay.
So, what, was there a wayfinding for specific businesses? In other words, was it wayfinding just for like streets and permanent places like parks and, you know, city halls and stuff like that? But, you know, businesses can change from time to time. So,
there was some criteria written, and there was a design of the wayfinding for the major entrance, the monuments, the directions to the parks, to the open spaces, and that sort of thing for the development. And then there was no specific language in the CC&Rs. There were guidelines for the CC&Rs for commercial. There's no font requirement, no particular lettering style at all, just some guidelines about relationships. A lot of attention is paid to architectural context. So if your building height is 3 stories, you got a different lettering height than if you're building height single story and that sort of thing. But it was written as a narrative guideline.
Well, I think one of the concepts that you have in the relationships is whatever. That these same things could be changed in and out though as businesses come and go and that type of thing. There would be a maybe a maintenance fee or something or whatever. Maybe an initial cost for business to get on there initially, but then get the name and a small increment fee or something. Make sure that it stays in the last level. Yeah, most of the stuff that you see here, this is mostly things that are back from the city hall park.
And in the context of Bill Boss, if that was, I don't remember if we had business listing boards, signs, or not. Mm-hmm. But I do remember that our philosophy was we were charging all the businesses kind of a members fee, a tenants fee, which you can't cut downtown under the current circumstances, although that's legal. And the developer would pay for changes on the sign. Out of that revenue source.
Yeah, I think you're a good point that doing this from the ground up is different than
completely.
Your approach is going to be
completely
different.
No, it's completely different.
Yeah.
We were able to do it before anybody was in.
Yeah. Mall management is much different. So staff looked at out there and here, and one of the things we again looked at Exhibit A, you see a picture of page 11. That's a picture of Jax. We talked a lot about Jax, how that works. We thought that the way Jax presented things looked nice. So thinking about that again in scale at all, we came up with something to start a conversation. I looked at those signs, and my estimate was they were somewhere around 12 to 15 feet apart, something like that. So from that context, said, okay, C3, the people thought that looked pretty decent. You could have one per 15-foot street frontage, something like that. But we put a maximum of four signs. What our thinking behind that is, most of the lots downtown are pretty small, depending on the fact of scale, but there are some large ones. And like how if the area where the local site is, there's that big lot where all the used cars and everything are out there. I think someday we'll probably just get to see that all. It's just pretty undeveloped at this point. But if it gets developed, it's a pretty large lot. So that's what we thought. Well, maybe we just want to put something like a maximum of four signs. So that otherwise you can get an awful long row of signs going up to 15 feet. So that was one way to sort of control having a huge amount of signs downtown. But again, for the institutional zone, we were thinking more like one per 100 square feet on the street frontage, one per 100 feet on the street frontage. And it looks to me like one thing we didn't put there would have been C2, actually.
That's the first one.
Oh, it is on the right.
Institutional zone, the sites to probably think about, there's really only three significant ones. It's GFU, so that's a big site, it's the whole campus. And then there's the cultural center, so it's especially in the front, because that's where they really need signs. And then there's the hospital institution as well. But they have the same need for signs. You know, they need people to know where the emergency room is. That's the biggest thing. But GFU is interested in the cultural center and getting more bankers and things. Cultural center mentioned the Portland Art Museum, for example. You'll have these big banners, and you'll see them on museums and things. But it seems appropriate because the building's pretty big. Yeah, we talked about that. It's sort of in scale. So if you had a big building or a big site, it's not as big an issue having a big banner on the building.
One example. Think the classic thing you always see, like the New York City or the Natural History Museum or something. It's a huge building, and they'll put these really large banners down the side vertically, but it doesn't look bad because it's a scale thing. It's not a huge building. They're large banners, but relative to the building, it doesn't sound bad. So it looks good.
Yeah. And I think GFU was thinking of a couple of things where they have, especially in some of the parking lots that go along the Fulton, I guess. They have light poles every 50 or 60 feet, and if you want to hang up an antenna on every light pole, you need to be able to have it every 50 or 60 feet. This doesn't actually say every 50 feet, it's one for 100 feet of street frontage, because a lot of those sites, about 1,000 feet of street frontage and only 5 antennas, so it's practically big, it's little 10. So it doesn't really put an actual spacing in, but it puts a number in. One way we knew they were interested.
But they're not on the frontage. They're on the interior of the campus, of the party. There's nothing along the front, on the roadway.
Yeah. I think they also wanted to be able to go out along the roadway. And the other, at the football stadium, bleachers, they wanted to put up a big banner too, so that was another thought.
Item four.
Yeah,
we'll get to that.
Yeah. But those are just test cases to think about. To see
again,
if it works and if you like that.
Right. And thinking about it, like the network, it's the exact same thing in cultural center. It's a large building, and it's got jail cultural center sign over there, but they got these big pillars. I can see some big, nice banners or some special exhibit or something like that. And as long as it's within scale of it, we'll probably look up there.
Chair. If I might, I just looked at this for the first time. Mm-hmm. In the context of the farmer's market tunes on Tuesday, I want to make sure that we can't read whether what I want to do would be permitted under this or not permitted under this. What I would like to do for the farmer's market is put an A-frame with a sign that says Farmer's Market Today, left turn on Howard Street, 10 blocks. And then another one that says left turn on Howard Street in 4 blocks. And another one that says left turn on Howard Street in 2 blocks. And then one says turn here. And do the same thing coming the other direction when we say right turn. I don't know, I can't tell whether those would be permitted in here or not. And I think Toons will probably be doing something similar and would be additional to that. Your
well, in response to that, Mike, you know, the way the current code works,
yes,
in the downtown area, if you had a mall in the downtown area on the highway, you could do the one portable sign, but you have to work with the property owner.
I understood the current code. And looking at this, Dave, I didn't know if this carried forward the current code or whether it changed.
This is not going to eliminate that ability to do the portable.
Mike.
It's not working.
Change one day signs.
And the other is this has some time limits. You know, special events, you know, can only be twice during a certain time.
Right, that's under the temporary signs.
Yeah, and I have temporary signs for the farmer's market every week for months. So I just want to make sure that we thought about that situation.
You have one day something?
Yeah, they're only out for one day a week.
Right. But the portable signs go for downtown and right away, doesn't matter whether they're out every day or not. What regulates that for the downtown area is whether the business that where that sign is, the business is open at that time. Not the farmer's market, but the business where that sign is has to be operating at that time.
I didn't know how to interpret this frequency language.
Right.
And I didn't know if it addressed that, because it does limit the number of special events you can have on a parcel during the calendar period.
Right.
And we clearly see that as a students.
So are you saying in the current...
Yeah, the temperature. What about the other event thing in the back?
Well, you're talking about temporary signs, yeah. Yeah, the other events and temporary signs. Yeah.
Temporary signs for events say right. That the lot may have two other events per calendar year.
Right, two other events, those grand openings, yeah. You could have a grand opening at Farmer's Market.
You could have grand openings over and over and over.
Yeah.
Right?
Every year.
You just give it slightly different thought.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Well, so the recommendation they're coming at, the first one was about wayfinding, and then the second one was something called a sign program. And so that's be something that, frankly, that could be so the cultural center could submit a plan for a sign program. And I suppose during that, they could say, here's like the three different events or types of things we're going to do. And, you know, for a farmer's market, they could say, we need these many signs. That out. It would be a way of exceeding that number. Mm-hmm. That's supposed to be really what the sign program is, that if someone puts out a coordinated plan with some cloth behind it, then they can exceed the number.
So if this is adopted, I would have to work with the cultural center, or that actually probably the cultural district.
My guess would be cultural district, because they'll probably want to have
to submit a plan for signs that are not on their property.
No. This would the sign program would just be for on their property.
I'm still talking about those portable signs
that are
up more frequently than this applies.
Right. But that's okay. I mean, those A-frames could be out there.
Yeah, the A-frames are
every day.
You're talking about ones that are going to be on other people's property. The temporary sign ones for the ones that are on your property.
Okay, so if I read this deeper, I find a different section about the A-frames?
Yeah, yep. There's a section in the sign code.
Portable.
Thank you.
A-frames, because they're actually the only sign that we allow, the private type sign we allow. Because otherwise, signs can pop wherever we get that.
And it's, I'm sorry.
So, it would be good for you guys, both of you, to go back and look at these pieces, because again, you've just seen it. Go back and think about it and come up with questions.
Cool.
It's going to go away.
Okay.
Yeah. And that's, and frankly, the best way to talk about it is to come up with like specific examples.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm going to play what I want.
Yeah. No, but that's, well, that's one of the hardest things when you try to write code or tweak code is you got to test it. Because if you, well, lots of times you develop it around one specific problem in mind, and you may solve that problem, but it may not solve half a dozen other problems that if you test it and run it sort of through the ringer. That way, it's a lot like writing computer code. You really have to debug it.
Right.
Cook for it. Carefully, you just pass it over. You know, you'll get it.
What this committee is doing is extremely interesting. Writing good code is one of the most difficult things planners do because you got to cover, it's got to be very clear, very concise, and it has to cover all scenarios. And so it's really, really difficult to do it well. It may not seem difficult, but it is.
I did, but
I took them.
I will. I can always email. I don't want to rehash stuff you guys have already been talking about. So, should I just email? Who should I email?
You can send it to
me. Okay. All right. Okay. Well, I'll wait and read through this carefully, and then make sure I'm not asking something that's already covered.
Question on, as I was looking through the different recommendations, the difference between number 3 and number 5.
In the recommendations?
Yes.
Okay, 3 and 5.
Which is on page 7 and then page 9.
Right.
Or I guess page, number 5 starts on page, the bottom of page 8. It seemed like there was just a lot of repeated language, and I didn't know, because it says they're both amending the same section, if I read that correctly. And so I was just wondering if that,
okay.
You've just organized our notes here so we can
see this,
where they're addressed in the same section?
Well, I hadn't, again, this was in the last packet, so we'll go through it again. The idea behind this was number 3 of the Penitence Framers, and we talked about this a couple of weeks ago, was that we wanted to allow those under the temporary sign of infection. So that's why we add Penitence Framers because it's not addressed in the current code at all.
Okay.
So we put that under the temporary sign of death, saying that you can use Penitence Framers under temporary sign or whatever you use temporary sign. Number 5 is talking about flags. Okay, and what we did there was we, section D of temporary signs, you can see that we added, we took the words out displays and we said flags are permitted, unlimited number of flags, because flags, we wanted to make sure that we weren't saying that you couldn't put out your American flags like you said. So
okay.
I want to make sure they put all those out, as many of the flags as opposed to flag displays. But so that people understand the difference between a flag and a flag display very clearly, that's why we put under the flag display the last point under recommendation 5, we're saying that we wanted to add the language permanently affixed to the single pole. And the reasoning in that was that then we can differentiate between a flag display where people put flag, state flag, whatever flag you want, that's going to clearly differentiate that between that and those teardrop flags. But that's been a lot of discussion about teardrop flags. So those are not permanently fixed. They're just stuck in the ground or stuck in a little hole or whatever. They're easily pulled out and that type of thing. So that allows those teardrop flags to still remain in the portable signs that have been good. So that's the reason that to distinguish those two.
Okay.
So again, I'll kind of point out the things that are different in here. I think we can recap whatever people, everybody's understanding what we were talking about. So in the 3, point 3 on page 7, everybody understand what we're trying to accomplish there? Again, more distance in a place where there's larger lots, I would see two, or more, allowing more density and length of down to iron C3, but keeping a cap on it. So a few cases where there are really large lots, there won't be a huge amount of like sign or 15 feet. But works for Jack because you have a nice small lot. Yeah, he possibly might have to remove one of those here on the land. So he's still he may just want to make sure. So any discussion on the concept then? Does that make sense to folks? Some proportionality to it? Well, if that works, then it kind of goes into what Steve was getting into, his point of section 4 there on page 7, talking about how big a sign, and how much signage we get. Now, it says what hasn't changed since the last couple of meetings is one, you get one square foot per foot of street frontage. But one of the concerns we had was they could put all the square footage on one sign or whatever. So to sort of get that, to address that issue, again, this is sort of scale, and it's bad enough, but in this case, I think it's better word perspective. So the idea here was for every 10 feet you go in from the front property line, you can have a 10 square foot sign. 10 to 20, you can have up to a 20 foot square sign. So the deeper you go into the lot, the further you go in, the larger the sign can be. We talk about it, it made sense to us, so if you understand it, if you don't, let us know, but if you do understand it, what do you think of that concept? So, you have a big building with set way back, they can have a pretty large sign, but the closer you get to the street, you're going to allow a smaller sign.
So it's not the distance between the property line and the property line on the street.
It's the distance from the property line the further you go into the interior, into the interior of the lot.
Okay, got it.
What we kind of liked about this was it's simple to grasp. It's fairly simple to grasp. We thought about kind of proportionality, ratios, numbers, but this is a pretty clear way. And something easier, hopefully, for Brad. Yeah, there you go.
Got it.
Enforcement's the best tool.
Is there anything in the wording here, at least I didn't find it, mm-hmm. that talks about corners and traffic viewing areas?
Well, we already have the vision clearance triangle.
There is a
We already have, yeah. We've got that right here.
To
make sure those are changed. Yeah, we are good.
But a nice thing about that is it's in a different section of the code and it applies to shrubs and signs and all sorts of things. And if you do a handout, we can combine it.
I would say,
right. Add it on.
Yeah, if we get permission, we can do that.
So any other, everybody think that's understand it? I think it sounds like a good concept.
So by going back, mm-hmm. and I know we've talked, this is kind of a for instance scenario, but you have a certain mattress company that displays a large sheet on top of their building. At what point does the city look at that? That's not coming down. It's not a temporary. It has to be considered under a permanent sign. I guess I'd say the same thing with Jack's. We use him as a whipping post quite a bit. Is those are permanent fixtures in the ground. Do we have something in the code that says what a sign has to be made out of?
Well, we describe like portable temporary signs.
I understand that.
Yeah.
But if that's a permanent fixture and it's on the interior of his property, couldn't that just be dealt with? That's not really temporary signage. It's not really portable signage. It should. That's something that should go to a design review. Well, as permanent signage, even though the media is changeable.
Right. If that can be part of their, CAD sign or whatever. That one, we already have that part. The major and minor CAD signs and all that sort of thing. If they want to have that and other more than they're allowed under the normal code, then they would do again this sign permit program. So and looking at all the things. Functional, where they're at, and all things under number five, size, color. I think the objective would be to make sure it's a nice, attractive, coordinated look.
So I guess doesn't it kind of, if you put it under a design review for signage, doesn't it take the monkey out the back of portable signage completely? It's kind of like the sheep on top of the building.
Yeah.
If they're coming to the city, it makes more sense. You could fight all day, is it portable or is it permanent? It's going to be permanent, so it should go under their general sign review rather than portable signage. And then the city can make a determination whether or not they're going to allow it or not.
Well, it allows, it has to work that, there's the front yard interior.
You've never seen one?
Yeah, I've seen
that. Okay.
I've seen the little park guy.
Right.
Yeah, I have a park. I think you bring up a really good point because in our discussion about, because jacks have come up so often, I've really thought of it in terms of being more temporary, but I think, in fact, you are correct that it's really more intended as a permanent fixture. Mm-hmm. They're going to have something there, whether it's that exact, the red sign, but I think we're really looking at something permanent, and our opinion thus far is it looks very attractive and so on. But in order to do it, we're not constantly putting them under the gun. We're trying to fulfill temporary sign codes that can be designated, or if the real intention is that it's permanent, that may in fact.
Right, or any other new business that wants to establish something on the interior of their property. I think it's a great driver to have changeable media within a sign. I mean, we do it with reader boards weekly. And it's,
well,
to me, it's really no different. Maybe I'm just too black and white about it. But
well, again, it's not the nice thing. Of course, we have to be content neutral. And so, if this sign program, one of the things I can envision is you could have multiple areas of frames that you can change in and out the content. That could be acceptable. As long as the basic signage is there, the framework and all, and they just have things in and out. We don't care about content.
But I would say for permanent signs there are sort of two different standards there. So where your business is in the C2 zone, it's pretty much just size and height and setback. And those are really the only controls. But in the downtown area in the C3 zone there's those plus a point system, and you have to earn 10 points to get approved, and there's probably 25 different ways to earn points. So it doesn't mean they're uniform, but it does require a few extra steps. And actually, I don't think the jack signs would meet the C3 standard for permanent signs.
Oh. But they could fall under the sign.
Right, but they could do this.
They could fall under the sign program.
This would give them an
option. Sign program,
Okay.
But again, with Jack's, that's trying to differentiate all those banners. And not
the permanent signs in C3 downtown really favor things. I think when they set that up, they looked at existing signs downtown that they liked, and they said, well, let's give that points and that point. So they're like thin signs sticking out from buildings. You get certain points for that, as opposed to just being flat. And they like signs that hung off a pole and swung freely. I think there was some intent to make it old-fashioned, but in truth, a lot of the signs aren't very old-fashioned. It actually allows a lot of creativity. It's just a different way to get there. There's something about carved wood. You got to. A lot of people also just do non-rectangular signs, just something with a curve or shape, and then hasn't really forced people to do old-fashioned sets, but it forces them to. What it really pushes them away from is doing a rectangular, internally lit white side that sort of pushes. You don't get points for that. Almost everything else gets points, so it encourages people to not do that.
I remember when we actually did that code, and I don't think the intent was to make it old-fashioned. I think it was just to get variety and make something attractive and have variety as opposed to the, you know, rectangular sign and no font lettering, just straight block lettering and that type of thing, just to try to put variety out there and make it attractive. But yeah, there's, I mean, there's parts of it that would make it old, like using wood or carving or the wrought iron.
Just to be aware of that, because you might not have been, unless you were downtown property owner, you wouldn't have run into it before. But having said that, the sign program thing would give Jack's a way to do what they do.
Alright, well then moving on, the only other change that we're going to change from the previous meeting was on page 6, or page 8, you know, under 4, the education course and maintenance recommendation, the double online senior exhibit B, and Steve's talking about that, this went through, did quite a bit of research on the internet. It wasn't, didn't find a lot that I liked, but I really kind of like, I like this one because it has very, very simple language, very much in layman's terms, a nice graphic, so you know, some people read things well, some people see things well, and they can see information. So it kind of covers a lot of the same bases. So the idea, page 8, was again to sort of accept, you know, that as sort of a format or a template to go off of, but we would make that different for English in our codes. But again, having lots of layman terms, concepts of layman terms, lots of graphics, that kind of thing. And this would be something that we could hand out to folks at whatever level, whether grad level, have available a chamber, however you could do it, at City Hall, wherever we could find one of the best avenues to get the information out. Help people understand how to do it. So, that's the other issue that we'll be running. So, any questions about that, or do you like that, that sort of format? Does that make sense to folks?
Better.
Just not to come up with them now, it'll be something that the staff can work with later, outline we have a review process, with, I don't know, planning commission or whoever, but somebody would be reviewing it and taking counsel. Sales. We were asked to look out there. We did look, go into Dallas, the concepts of page 13.
They've done all the work for us.
Pardon?
They've done all the work
for us. We just got a plug and play. They changed around. interesting to know how you back those. Those signs are probably worth a whole lot more than $15 if somebody wanted to be in the area. So they might not return those signs.
Yeah. Well, but if it's a deposit and you have a credit card,
So there is no fee. So in the way we run this or whatever, then we have the funding mechanism to have the general fund.
Yeah. Ooh. Ouch.
Whatever. Yeah. So.
Well, maybe you could change it from a $15 fee, and if it's not returned in so many days, you charge $50 or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
Just so you're getting the money back on the signs, because I can see these are pretty nice.
Send the code enforcement guy out.
Yeah. Yeah.
I wonder if this would reduce the amount of enforcement time necessary. What would be the incentive? Why would anybody bother to get these instead of putting up the signs that they currently do?
Because you're
going to
take their signs down, right?
Well, right. Which happens anyway, but when the garage sale doesn't last.
Yeah, I mean, to some degree, it might make it, I don't know how many people are going to do this, what percentage, we're guessing how many of them are going to go for this. The ones that do, they might be a little more attractive than obviously something about, hand scribbling something up, just poster board, which happens all the time, of course, having a little more, obviously, attractive that way. But who knows how many people will do it.
Did you have a chance, was it you who contacted Dallas?
Or yeah.
Did you have a chance to ask Dallas how successful their program has been? Has their code enforcement officer or equivalent person had to go pick up Rancho signs less because of this?
Yeah, and then I think the credit of that conversation again, but how successful we feel like it's been working. Yeah. I mean, people are actually using this with us, still doing more stuff or whatever. Well, I can certainly answer that question.
Or maybe the other question is what is their penalty for the post
if you
get caught just nailing your own signs up? I would think it's pretty simple. Most of them have an address.
Well, they allow 2 garage sales a year. See, we don't regulate how many you can have a year.
But you might ask Dallas what the penalty is. Say if you just go state by sign. Is there a penalty imposed on the other side if you don't participate?
I'm also curious how expensive it would be to educate the entire city on the garage sale permit program. Just getting the word out there.
How long has Dallas been doing this? Because it's one of those things, if it does do well, it's going to probably over time.
Right.
As the word gets out.
Well, and also, to conclude, most effective enforcement, Brad, we want you out Saturday afternoon about 5:00 driving around, when all the garage sales are done, but no one's picked up the signs yet, or Sunday morning at 7:30 or whatever, are we really going to have you go out at that time?
Well, that's a good point about Brad. I was just thinking about if I had a phone call.
Because
he'll know the right answer to the question to ask, but the main problem.
I was thinking about just my own experience that, we've had garage sales in the past, and we're just not that organized. We're running around trying to get the garage sale ready, and we go, we didn't put up any signs. So then we go, we run out, we pack them up somewhere, hopefully legally. but it's at the last minute, and then we go and we take them down later, that day kind of thing. But I think if people saw these signs out there, there would be a learning curve. People would see it and they would know, there's a garage sale sign. And I think over time, most people do try to comply.
Yeah.
So if they saw it, they might think, that'd be nice. Or maybe they would say, that's really more effective than packing a little flyer up onto a utility pole. So that might get people thinking. But it might work.
Yeah, I think you have to think, certainly, if you're going to dig it forward.
And it looks like by looking at their application sheet here, after all the different number of things, it says you need an off-premise sign. Because this is intended to be sort of in front of their yard.
Yeah, what he told me was, I think the impression was the garage sale thing stays there, and then below where it says property of the city of Dallas, you put something on top of that saying where the address is.
So these are the signs that you would put out on the cardboard box at the corner of Spring Grove and 99.
I think that's what this is. This is an off-premise sign. So
you can
apply without having to pay the $15. But if you wanted to put a sign out on the street, you get one of these and put it out there. But you can have a sign in front of your house.
Okay.
For somebody that's got one on Springbrook and then, you have to go down 3-4 Street, but they have to get one of these for each one, so you need four of them.
Yeah. Well, it says only one sign shall be posted on the premise of which the sale will be held.
I'm talking about it. A garage sale being 5 blocks into a subdivision, where you have to make the turn, then turn here, and then turn here. You require this for.
Well, and also, I just saw, this isn't an application just for the sign, but it's to have a permit for a garage sale, period. I didn't realize that earlier, but and then it goes on to ask me to sign for it. So, we're not permitting the sales, just the signage.
I would suggest if they contact Dallas again, there are two questions we should ask. One, the cost of the A-frame signs that they are using and the loss factor that they have from them. Mm-hmm. If these are $100 signs, then the signs that I have purchased for various functions are closer to $190.
Right.
And does a $50 deposit get back?
Well, that was my. But on the other hand, you do know who it is. I mean, they have to sign off.
Well,
of course, Leslie did one on their application, or if you do it by credit card or whatever. But
he's a collector.
Supposedly, you can come back.
I think your refundable deposit needs to be enough to assure that people are going to bring them back.
Well, okay, the flip side of that is if you make it too high, then people. The other
thing that I think we need to inquire about, if we're looking at the body of this garage sale permit form, is number two. It says the owner of the goods will pay no commission for the garage sale. And I think a clarification might be in order there, because if that means that the garage that you can't hold a garage sale where you have an estate sale company come in and set up and conduct the sale. They operate on a commission basis. Mm-hmm. Normally it's 30 or 40% of the sale. If that makes that illegal to do that, I think we need to know that up front. And it needs to be stated a little better than it's stated here. On the other hand, I'd be very careful about doing that because that's the only way that some people can physically handle sales, especially older people, is to have somebody come in and conduct the sale for them. So a clarification on that number two would be.
Yeah, great. Good point.
Well, where it says the off-premise sign must be due back, clean, good condition within 3 days, so you can forfeit your deposit. Why couldn't you just make the deposit a lot more than $15? Because it's not like most people. There may be some who they use a credit card for the deposit and then they bring it back and return the credit card receipt. So,
well, I mean, it's just an overall question. How did you come up with $15? How was that worded? Just generally, why that number? When we know that the signs are worth $100 or whatever, how did you come up with that number? Again, sweet spot. You were talking about the sweet spot that's going to make it people fly.
And maybe they had cheaper signs.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of a major world, though. That's who he knows. Or there's some idea of what those would do. Like, if you built George Fox stuff. So
there are gator board signs that are kind of
similar. Well, these look like the thrift store has, the one with full color front and back. Those are $190. This, doing one color thing like that, would be a lot cheaper. That's why.
Okay, well, we'll have a more in-depth conversation.
I'm just curious about the whole garage sale thing in general. I mean,
yeah.
Is it really something we want to tackle? And is it that big of an issue as it is? I mean, it just sounds like a big headache for everybody. It sounds like it's going to upset a lot of residents. It's going to make your guys' job a lot harder.
I agree.
Just throwing it out there.
They're irregular enough. I mean, they happen a lot, but any individual's not going to do it often. So they'll be educated now, but when they happen next year or 5 years ago, I mean, it's not something that spreads out even quickly.
Well, yeah, a couple people saying they think this is going to go. Well, how do the rest of you feel? Is this something we want to continue pursuing or not?
After reading through this sheet, I was curious to hear from Dallas how successful it has been in cutting down the time that the staff has to spend taking down garage sale signs. And I was also very curious how they fund it. And according to this paper, it's not a self-funding program, which I don't think is going to work right now for the city. It's got to be self-funding.
I think most people take their garage sale signs down when they're done, like you do.
No, they don't.
Okay. Besides Mark, but I need to let me finish. When if they're not out, if they're not taken away within a day, say Monday or something, then that's when you could put a fine notice on their door saying if it's not taken down within a day, you have a fine. And let them do it. So that way the city's got a little revenue coming in. I don't know if I should notice, but and then we wouldn't have to do anything like this because people are going to put the signs out anyway. Even with this, they're still going to put a neon orange sign out on the road that says garage sale this way. That's what I think.
I agree that maybe it's something that we should tackle at this point, but I agree that it's also something that maybe the city should look at in the future because people don't take down their garage sale signs.
Right, but the ones that do,
there's enough steel in about half the power poles up and down this highway. You could scrap them for metal rather than wood, and they don't. They nail them up in front of businesses, and they forget about it.
I'm sure clear that there is a.
They just don't think about it that they have to.
I think we explained this before, so we don't clearly understand that they cannot attach a power pole.
So maybe this would help curb some of that in the future, but I don't.
In my sense of it is if there's some no-brainer way of solving the problem, day barely, let's move forward. But let's not let this issue slow us down from getting our codes purpose we're meeting so that we can get out of this moratorium and get on with it to see whether the recommendations we've made are in fact sound and are going to work and make your job easier and make our community cleaner, less cluttered. I'd be far more interested in getting the purpose done for why we were called together as opposed to allowing this whole issue of garage signs to slow down that process.
Okay, so what I'm hearing what I'm hearing you say is you would like to have a conversation with Dallas just to have a conversation and we'll report back to you, but then we'll probably at this point be
it's already in the regulations, right? Something about garage sale. I think we should just leave it there and move on. Yeah.
So
I think we should for now.
We're not going to pursue it. I mean, it would be interesting to find out.
So if you ever do it again, we'll find out more.
Yeah.
So we're curious. We'll call it down.
Okay, we'll call it important.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
I have to admit, we're going to have like 50 of these things. And where are they going to go? I mean, half this property.
Well, yeah, the garage sale is going to
I think we'd probably be stuck doing it here because, this kind of thing, you need like a retail storefront. Well, that's the closest thing we have is a front counter here. I mean, make a payment here or whatever. You don't want to make them go down to public safety yard or, then other areas aren't just set up for it. So, we probably have to do it here. It's the chamber one to do it, but I know. No, but I mean, you wouldn't want to have someone, a staff person, spend that much time on those either. So there's some downsides to having that kind of program.
Yeah. I suspect the signs are just part of their roster program. And without requiring them to decide by themselves, almost a half day. Like, you need the whole permit required.
All right, we will put that for us.
Okay.
So the final piece with Dennis's email was he was asking about whether the committee would like to revisit the idea of getting involved in the campaign signs. Does anybody want to go back and revisit that or not at this point?
Too bad we didn't have to replace the charge this time around.
I think they're already based on, well, I think they should be based on sign code, right? Which is what our sign code is now, temporary sign code?
Yeah. Yeah, temporary.
That's how I feel about it. If somebody wants to violate it, they can violate it.
Okay. So what I'm hearing is they don't want to go back to the previous. Okay. With that, then I would see that we have a pretty good basis now for our recommendations. We'll clean it up for the next meeting. Back to you. We have maybe one final discussion. And if there's any other things we can do, then I think we might have what we need to go forward and count this. Is that about right?
Yeah, sounds great.
Great. Okay. Next meeting is planned for 2 weeks from now, May 21st.
Okay.
Any new business?
We are adjourned.
Eyes and knees.